Hello and welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brower Show, bringing you the latest world news and health research. Hope everyone enjoyed that Hagman show on Friday. Had a really good, intense show, went over some pretty serious topics. Great show, great weekend. And again, want to let everybody know the purple sticks are in stock. People have been buying them up literally by the caseload this weekend. So hopefully we can keep them in stock for a little bit longer this time, but we'll see how that goes. Other than that, fantastic day today here at Health Master. Staying busy as always. And how are you doing today, Dad?
Austin, I'm doing great. And as for the purple sticks, get a case. Just get a case. This is a great product. And for some reason, this management of this company that manufactures these products, their cash flow short's the problem. They can't pay for their material, apparently. I don't know. And they can't keep things on a regular basis. This last time, it was almost 4 or 5 months back ordered. The only reason I had enough to last me the entire time, I had a case. And I was just kind of gradually going through them and kind of keeping them on a little, how should I say, I was rationing them to myself. And so they're back. So don't count on them staying here very long, because I imagine once we go through this batch, it'll be another 6 months. So just get them while you can, so that way you don't have to be backordered, and, you know, or basically not get the product. Because the thing I like about this particular product is it's green tea. Most of these energy sticks, they come from green bean, coffee bean. Extract. And we had a manufacturer come to us years ago, and they were going to manufacture us a purple stick. And I told them I wanted out of green tea. They said, well, it's hard to source the green tea. We're going to use coffee bean extract. And I said, well, coffee beans make me jittery after about the third day. I said, oh, no, these won't do this at all. These are great. Man, by the third day, I was about to chew the doggone plaster off the walls in the house. I was so uptight. My wife says, what the heck's wrong with you? And I said, this is just ridiculous. I said, like, I'm on coffee again. And so I quit taking it. And I said, guys, this is ridiculous. You said I wouldn't do this to me. It elevates cortisol. The green tea extract, plus it's loaded with B vitamins, it not only feeds your body, it's actually healthy for you because of the green tea. And I told my wife the other day, she was kind of dragging around in the mornings, and I said, look, you need to start taking purple sticks. Now we got them back in stock. Just take a half of one, take one, whatever you need to do, and boot up in the morning. And she's been doing that, and it's like I got a new wife, because, you know, she didn't drink coffee. Because remember, coffee elevates cortisol, which is a stress hormone. And it makes you irritable and uptight, and you don't want to use it on a regular basis. Now you say, well, I like coffee. Well, here's my confession to you. I don't like coffee. I love coffee. When I was in graduate school at Florida State University, I used to work for a company called Quality Coffee Service, which is still in business to this day. It was owned then, and it's still owned now by the family and the relatives of David Pulsifer. And I worked for him while I was in graduate school, you know, marketing this coffee stuff for him. I mean, I love coffee. He actually gave me a bun coffee maker, and I would get up every morning, and I had it on an auto drip cycle, and it would make coffee for me. And I would tell my roommates, don't talk to me, don't breathe my air, don't get around me, don't even get close to me unless I've had my two or three cups of coffee. Yeah, that was me. And I drink 18 cups a day. I would literally drink a huge German Bierstein, and I'd have three of those. Each Bierstein held six cups of coffee, and I would start in the morning, I'd have it in the afternoon, and by my lunch, and by mid-afternoon, I'd have another one. You think, well, Ted, that's ridiculous. I don't do that. Well, yeah, it was ridiculous, and I did do that, and I don't do that anymore. Upon occasion, I'll still have a cup of coffee. I don't do it very often, but I will have one. Now, this morning, I had my purple sticks, feeling absolutely great. So I try to avoid coffee, because after about the third day I drink coffee, I start getting that same jittery, irritable, can't sleep at night, cortisol elevates. Once that cortisol goes up off a cup of coffee, if you're over the age of 40, it takes 2 to 3 days for that cortisol to get back down to normal. That's why it messes up your sleep pattern so badly. That's why the purple sticks are so good. That's why I get so aggravated when they don't have them in stock. So, yeah, load up on the purple sticks. Get as many as you need for 6 months or whatever, and then basically just reorder them. When you get down to half a case, order another case, and just keep them in stock that way. And that way you won't run out, and that way we can call you guys up when we need more product, and we can say, hey, look, I need to buy those purple sticks back from you. We've got people screaming and yelling for purple sticks. It's one of those things that we have to make sure we keep this inventory under control. And hopefully, I've even offered that company. I said, if you'll give me the formula, if you give me your manufacturing place, I will order them for you guys, and I will order them for us in order to keep them in stock. That's how important that particular product is for me. But of course, they declined that offer, which is ridiculous to me, because I would have subsidized it for them, and I would have carried their inventory, so they would be running out, since they can't seem to maintain inventory control management, which is ludicrous for a company of this size. But need I digress and complain to you guys on a Monday morning, because this is the day the Lord hath made, and I will rejoice, and I will be glad, and it's about 65 degrees, clear blue skies, absolutely about a 3-knot wind right now. So it's stunningly beautiful here in Central Florida with absolutely no chemtrails, which is nice. I want to read you a couple articles about Afghanistan real quick. This one was written in 2016, and it says, the U.S. war, and I've posted all these on the Health Master's website, the U.S. war in Afghanistan is fueling the global heroin epidemic and enabling the drug trade. When the U.S. overthrew the Taliban in the wake of 9/11, it set the stage for the most explosive growth of Afghan's opium industry. Now, what's interesting about this is when you look at the actual information on this, before 9/11, there was a massive heroin shortage in the United States, and the CIA was going berserk with it because they couldn't fund their operations with their illicit drug trade. There, I don't think anybody else has ever said that but me. And they went nuts. And so they had to find a way because Southeast Asia drug market had basically dried up because of the weather. We apparently screwed up the Ho Chi Minh Trail with all our flooding in Vietnam. And we moved our base of operations to run the black ops and the CIA into Afghanistan. The Taliban had come in and pretty much shut down the drug trade, the opium trade in Afghanistan. And we had to have a precipitating incident to go back into Afghanistan and take over the drug trade again and to reintroduce opium to all of the people in Afghanistan. And so we put about 500 square miles for about 4,000 metric tons under Obama. It was 500 square miles of Afghanistan in production with a poppy, 4,500 metric tons of heroin production coming out of Afghanistan. Under Trump, that increased to 1,000 square miles. Guys, think about how much land that is. 1,000 square miles. 1,000 square miles. 33 miles one direction, 33 miles the other direction, straight, all heroin production. Think about that for a second. 33 miles this way, 33 miles that way. Yeah, that's a lot of dope. And about 10,000 metric tons now under Trump. Nobody wants to talk about that. Heroin basically had been stopped in the world. The price had gone through the roof, and we couldn't do it. We had to basically force it back in. And this article goes on to say, despite our promises to eradicate the black market, the U.S. actually enables the illegal drug trade. As the journalist Abby Martin writes, the U.S. government has laid a long history of facilitating the global drug trade. In the 1950s, it allowed opium to remove, process, and traffic it through the Golden Triangle of Southeast Asia. That's why we fought the Vietnam War. While it trained Taiwanese troops to fight communist China. In the 80s, the CIA provided logistical and financial support to anti-communist conference in Nicaragua, who are also known as international drug traffickers. Since the DEA got the boot from the Bolivian government in 2008, cocaine production in that country has steadily fallen year after year. And in 2012, a Mexican government official claimed that rather than fighting drug traffickers, the CIA and other international security forces are actually trying to manage the drug trade, which is exactly what they're doing. This all started with what happened after World War II. Remember, Lucky Luciano had gotten involved with the United States, had been pardoned because they had sunk a ship in New York Harbor under espionage, and basically the mob ran to New York Harbor and ran the docks, and they released him to run the docks again under the understanding that he would work with the federal government. In addition to that, Gelland, a German general, had come to the CIA, at that time it was still the OSS, and wanted to run counter-communist insurgent groups in Europe. And basically, they didn't have a way to fund it. So then our government went to Chiang Kai-shek in China and said, how are you basically keeping a million-man standing army in China? And he said, we do it through selling dope, opium, heroin, hashish, whatever you want to call it. And so the CIA had the brilliant idea, why don't we start slinging drugs? Well, they already had the thing set up with a mob in New York City with Lucky Luciano, so they started bringing in drugs. This is exactly what this article is implying, so I'm telling you how it works. And so hence this organized crime CIA syndicate was developed as far as working together to distribute the narcotics. In other words, when the narcotics would come into the country via the military, they had no way to distribute it. In other words, they didn't have like dope dealers on the street, but the mob did. So they would drop the drugs off to the mob, to these central crime families. You have the Italian mafia, the Jewish mafia, the Irish mafia, the Russian mafia, the Chinese mafia. You have all these different mafioso groups in the world that operate their organized crime with their prostitution, with their gambling, with their drugs, all the stuff they do. And so they started working directly with these families. They used the Vatican Bank at that point to basically sterilize or to wash the money. And this is how it all got started back in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s. This is what John F. Kennedy had discovered, and John F. Kennedy decided he'd had enough of it. And he was going to get rid of the CIA, get rid of the drug trade. Remember, they were putting 50 kilos of heroin in each body bag casket coming out of Vietnam. Did they have an incentive to stop the body bags or the caskets from coming out of Vietnam? Did they have an incentive not to allow over 50,000 people to die in Vietnam? No, because it was the primary route which drug was being trafficked into the United States. And that's why so many of our boys who went over there got addicted to drugs, because it was so free. It was flowing over there. This is the problem when it funds these black op groups, but nobody wants to talk about it. So the U.S. war in Afghanistan is fueling the heroin epidemic and enabling the drug trade. This is the first article I put. And then there's another article from Lou Rockwell. He usually has really good stuff, but there's a big hole here in his article. It says, the Afghanistan war has been a tissue of lies. He says, in our country, a lie is not the most... He quotes Alexander Solzhenitsyn. He says, in our country, the lie has become not just a moral category, but a pillar of the state. This week, the venerable Washington Post newspaper revealed a bombshell 2,000-page secret Pentagon report detailing the astonishing failure of the U.S. war strategy in Afghanistan, America's longest war. And the problem is they don't talk at all about what's going on with the poppies in this article. I mean, it's the drugs, stupid, at Lou Rockwell. You guys do not understand that. It's the reason we're in Afghanistan has nothing to do with getting rid of the Taliban. The reason they have said it is a long-term, lifelong project in Afghanistan is because they've got to manage the poppy fields. And then an excellent article came out from Darius Shatamizbi. It says, what everyone is missing about the Afghanistan papers. And it says, we can't let the Afghanistan's papers obscure itself into nothingness. And he goes, if you need more proof that lawmakers in the U.S. couldn't care less about America's woeful commitment to human rights abroad or even about the public who vote them into the office, look no further than the recent Afghanistan papers. According to the Washington Post, the outlet had obtained 2,000 pages of notes from interviews with more than 400 generals, diplomats, and other officials directly involved in the war in Afghanistan. The documents showed that the U.S. officials were lying about the progress being made in Afghanistan, lacked a basic understanding of Afghanistan, were hiding unmistakable evidence the war had become unwinnable, and wasted close to $1 trillion in the process. But wait a minute. Wait a minute. Here's the deal. One standout statistic among many other concerning ones is the fact that before the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan, the Taliban had almost completely put to bed Afghans' illicit opium trade. Since the U.S. invasion, combined with $9 billion in funding for anti-opium programs, the Taliban is not only stronger than ever, it supplies 80% of the world's opium. Approximately $1.5 trillion of heroin is produced out of Afghanistan, making it the third largest commodity in the world. Yeah, that's what nobody's bothering to talk to me about the Afghan papers. Nobody wants to talk about the drug trade. And when you start, you know, all these people, you know, you get these guys you see on the internet and they start, you know, they claim to be the CIA, claim to be this, claim to be that. And also you start talking to them about drug trade and also they change the subject. They don't want to talk about it. Steve Potenicek is one of the worst about that. I've heard him multiple times get on interviews to ask him about the Afghan drug trade. He immediately changed. He always puts out the mainstream narrative of what he's supposed to talk about. Remember, the media is controlled. It is completely controlled. The alternative media, I hate to say this to you guys, there's a lot of people in alt media that are COINTELPRO, counterintelligence. That's right. They're basically being paid by other people to be in and to put stories out. And 80% of the time, they can pretty much say what they want to say. 20% of the time, they got to seed the stuff in that's supposed to be kind of like disinformation into the media. I knew of one person, I'm not going to mention any names, who was going to get a dishonorable discharge from the military. And was told that if she started her own talk show, that she would not have the dishonorable discharge, but they would be pretty much giving her information that this person had to give out. So it was one of those deals. So it's one of those things that you got to be really, really careful with who you listen to, and you always got to ask yourself a question. What's the motive here behind all of this stuff? Well, we know that the heroin is the third largest commodity in the world behind oil and natural gas. That's a lot of money. We're talking trillions of dollars. And, you know, again, we love to spray glyphosate on everything here in the United States. The FDA won't even declare it illegal. It's one of the most toxic substances on earth. And I'm not saying that glyphosate should be used. But if we're willing to spray it on all of our food, including our corn and our wheat before we harvest it, and poison the people here in the United States with glyphosate poisoning, why don't they load up one of those C-130 transport planes with a bunch of sprayers and, you know, spray it from about 1,000 feet or 500 feet above the ground, glyphosate, and wipe out the 1,000 square miles of poppy production like in 2 or 3 days. They could easily do that, by the way. They could completely wipe out the drug trade, but they don't. They don't do it because it funds too many of the black operations, too many of the Jeffrey Epstein-type operations in which they have to think about this for a second. A lot of these guys run around in these private jets. You know, I've got a friend who's got a private plane. He's got a private jet. And this thing is a money pit. And it's a little one. It's a money pit. I mean, it's thousands of dollars an hour just to fly this little jet. And these big planes, these big boys they use, these 747s, 777s, you got to have some serious jack to fly one of those things and do the maintenance on those aircraft. And they, all of a sudden, Jeffrey Epstein has his own jet. He has his own island. And nobody knows where his money came from. Now we find out he was Mossad. And he was always doing blackmailing people and bringing young girls to the island. Well, I got a question to ask. If there's 1,000 photographs of these young girls and they're naked and they're, you know, pretty much they're young girls, where do they all go? There's 1,000 of them. There was a few of them come forward. Did the other 1,000 get, oh, should I dare say it? Were they killed? Were they sacrificed in their Kabbalah rituals and their weird stuff they're involved in? Were they basically murdered? Why hasn't anybody looked up these 1,000 photographs, these 1,000 girls? Apparently they had the names with them and who they were. Doesn't anybody want to know what happened to these children? That's kind of my question for a Monday morning. Where did they all go? What happened to them all? And why is it that we can't talk about this stuff? Why is it we can't talk about the drug funding? Why is it the Afghan papers? Quiet. We can't talk about that. Why not? Well, because that's how the world works. Through the drug cartels, through the CIA. The CIA and the drug cartels, after Lucky Luciano in New York Harbor, got together, formed a permanent partnership, which still goes on today. Yeah. What do you think, Oz?
That's really well said. And another aspect of the entire Middle Eastern war that a lot of people don't ever address, and I haven't talked about in a while, but I'm bringing it up again very briefly, is that another, which in my opinion, the heroin and the control of those resources and oil and everything in the Middle East is probably one of the primary reasons that we continue to stay over there. But also, too, you have to understand, one of the primary reasons we even went over there and we continue to stay over there was for military intelligence in the aspect of militant and guerrilla warfare. What do I mean by that? If you've noticed, every war that the United States has been in, our weapons, our tactics, our vehicles, our equipment, it's always upgraded after that war. We use the intelligence that we gather from other countries. We use the intelligence that we gather from scrimmages and wars and battles and so forth. And we put that together to upgrade our equipment. That's what you do as far as in a military. That's hence the military-industrial complex. Well, one of the interesting things about Iraq and the sad parts about that entire war that began over there and even into Afghanistan is that very few people wanted to address the fact that we were losing hundreds of men, not just killed, but severely dismembered from IEDs, the basically bombs that they put in the ground, explosive devices. And so Humvees were literally blowing up like tin cans on a regular basis, guys losing their legs left and right. This was, if you know anybody that went over there, I have many of friends that were severely injured in that war. Well, ironically enough, after enough individuals died and were maimed and seriously injured, the U.S. government, the Pentagon, came in and said, we need bigger weaponry, heavier armored personnel carriers, and we need mine-resistant armored personnel carriers. Hence the MRAP conception that came about in 2007, which the U.S. military spent $50 billion on the first year in production of MRAPs into the Middle East that we dumped over there by the thousands. And of course, that equipment appeared and did quite good at being mine resistant. You know, they could hit IEDs, they had the minesweeper ones, there's all kinds of variants into them. I'm not going to get into all of that. But what's interesting about it, my whole reason in getting in is what I'm saying, is that we use the Middle East as well. Iraq, Fallujah, Afghanistan, the Providence over there, all the big fat battles that we've constantly been involved in, we've used those to gather intelligence on how to further suppress guerrilla warfare very, very effectively, whether it's through the Predator drone system, which, by the way, the first Predator drone strike was deployed in 2002, if you guys didn't know that, by the CIA. The CIA was the first group that deployed an active airstrike with an unmanned aircraft in 2002. They were the ones that did it. And there was great blowback, if you guys remember that about it. And, of course, that was another program that has advanced far beyond whatever we thought since it was, you know, produced. Originally, when the UAV, the drone program, was introduced, it was produced solely for surveillance. It was basically to go ahead. It was very crude. A lot of the aircraft broke, had very short ranges on it, and of course, it's adapted and grown through DARPA over the past 20 years. So now we have drones that can be sitting 30, 40,000 feet up in the air. You never even see them, and they can drop a missile, a Hellfire, whatever missile they're equipped with, literally right in your front door, and you don't even know it happened. That's how advanced the drone programs are now, and we have killed tens of thousands of people in the Middle East via drone strikes on a regular basis, and people seem to forget that program. So the Middle East has been an incredibly effective tool for the military-industrial complex, because remember, when 9/11 happened, the military budget, if I'm not mistaken off the top of my head, was less than like $400 to $450 billion. That's where we were roughly at for the Pentagon, the DOD. I think around $400 billion, which is a massive amount of money. Well, of course, once we invaded, the Pentagon budget exploded all the way to its peak of $805 billion, which is still staying right around there now, and is continuing to go up. They're expecting to be somewhere in the $1 trillion range in the next year or so. This is just Pentagon budget. And so what we've seen now is the excuse to build incredibly advanced weaponry, incredibly advanced vehicles, incredibly strong armored personnel carriers, and then the kicker, the big kicker that people don't want to talk about, a lot of people in mainstream media don't want to talk about it, because Trump just basically initiated it once again, Homeland Security through federal grants be basically giving police, sheriff's departments, Homeland Security, all these groups, all these domestic police agencies in the United States, tens of millions of dollars in full-blown military equipment, including MRAPs, machine guns, body armor, Gem 3 night vision, helicopters, drones, all the military equipment that the United States uses that they basically have overflow and surplus on. They decided, hey, even though we may spend $780,000 on an MRAP, we're just going to go with a grant and give it to a local sheriff's department and make them pay cost of shipping, which is about $2,500, to haul one of those giant 18-ton vehicles over to the department. And now across the country, we have thousands of military MRAPs, drones, machine guns, etc. The list goes on of military equipment that is in the hands of local police departments, completely in most cases with very little oversight, very little military oversight, and it's just there. Now, at any point in time, Homeland Security can requisition that equipment. They can move that equipment because of the grants they have. A lot of people don't realize that. Just because the police department has it, the sheriff's department has it, there's big strings. When they hand you a $750,000 armor personnel carrier for $2,500, you best believe there's strings on it with the Pentagon. And then we see incidences like happened in Cape Coral a few weeks ago, where over 20-plus officers unloaded their magazines into an occupied UPS vehicle with two robbery suspects and a UPS driver who was held hostage in the middle of downtown traffic at 4:30 p.m. Now, if you don't think that's a serious issue, I don't know how far the conversation continually needs to go with people, because I've had people argue with me on this topic now and be like, well, the robbery suspect shot at him. If you actually watch the live leak video, you'll see that the police descended on the UPS truck with about 15 officers circling it in the middle of downtown traffic, and finally one of the suspects popped off a shot, and of course all the law enforcement officers unloaded. So does it really appear that law enforcement has a hard time defending themselves and handling themselves in a shootout? It doesn't appear so to me. Does it seem that law enforcement has a very difficult time respecting the rule of law and civilians and and life of hostages? Yes, it does appear that to me as well, but it doesn't matter now anymore, does it? Because now these guys can show up in 2 and 3 and 4 MRAPs, belt-fed weapons, night vision, 20, 30, 40-man fire teams as much as they want and loaded to bear, and do anything they want and suppress any situation that occurs because they have the military equipment to do so via the Middle Eastern war. So I want to kind of bring that up again so everybody gets a real clear picture of what has happened in the Middle East, why we've been there, the multi-pronged discussion of all the different options of why we've been there, and what it has done now to the military police complex in the United States now, where we literally have militarized police running around the streets of the United States in military equipment, in military armor personnel vehicles, and we're supposed to think this is just normal nowadays, Dad.
Well, let's step it another notch. You know, let's look at Virginia. You know, Virginia last week, now maybe they walked themselves off the cliff. Apparently the governor's backing down a little bit as far as seizing weapons. But Virginia almost went into a full-scale Civil War type conflict as far as against the state government.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really close last week. I mean, people were actually getting ready for war. The problem is the government and the state and the local law enforcement officers and all the different groups that are pro the governor, against the governor, they've been weaponized. They've got all these MRAPs. They've got full belt 50-60 caliber machine guns, you know, full belt 308 machine guns. And so, you know, what do you do against that? I mean, where do you go against that? I mean, these are designed specifically for only one purpose, to kill people. I mean, in large amounts of people, swaths of people. You know, hordes of people. When you have a 50 or 60 caliber belt fed, or 60 or 308 caliber belt, an M60, which is a 308 caliber machine gun, belt fed, you know, with, you know, huge belts of ammo. It's designed for one reason only. This is for war. This is for coming in and wiping out large chunks of the population. So why does a police force need that? I mean, that's a serious question. Now you say, well, they don't really have M60s, but they've got all these other automatic weapons. Why do police need fully automatic weapons? Why is that? And the other thing that really bothers me with what happened last week and the week before that with this idiot governor in Virginia is, where was Donald Trump in all this? I never heard him tweet or say one thing about what was going on in Virginia. Why did he come in and say, hey, you guys down in Virginia, governor, you need to calm this down. You're pushing the Second Amendment rights. Nothing. Trump didn't say anything about the Second Amendment. Not a word. Not one word that I saw. Now, guys, maybe he did. You can send me, maybe you can correct me on this and send me the link where Trump discussed this in detail at a press conference. And said, hey, look, this needs to stop. The governor of Virginia is about to start seizing weapons and against the population's will, wanting to do it. They're about to have a war. Not a word. Tick tock, tick tock. Nothing. Hear nothing from Donald Trump. Nothing. Nothing. But we have more of the confusion of Capitol Hill. And now they're saying this Senate trial is going to be quickly done, over with, etc. We've got literally hundreds of billions and trillions of dollars being put into repo markets now in order to try to sustain the stock market. I mean, all of this stuff is complete and total obfuscation and manipulation of the markets is all it is. But, you know, it's all about the narrative of making sure we maintain the narrative. You know, Donald Trump, people who worship Donald Trump, and don't get me wrong, I like some of the stuff that Donald Trump has done, and I voted for him. I did, because it was anything but the witch of Benghazi, anything. But, you know, we have to hold his feet accountable. We're doing the same thing that we did to George Bush, George W., in his first term, and when we reelected him. We let him do whatever he wanted to do, whenever he wanted to do it, however he wanted to do it, and we didn't think about it whatsoever. We didn't do that. We kind of just let it go. And we let him go into Afghanistan, let him do what he was going to do, and nobody really thought about it or cared about it. Until after we saw ourselves in this giant war in the Middle East we couldn't get out of, couldn't extricate. And of course, Barack Obama promises he'd get us out of the war, and he didn't. Trump promises he'd get us out of the war, and he didn't. It just goes on and on and on, because they're being told what to do by this international banking cartel that runs the planet. I talked about the CIA a minute ago, and I talked about how they sling the drugs. Let's stop for 1 second and discuss this. We, the people of the United States, we have basically been, our authority has been usurped, and we've done it willingly. We've willingly walked to the gallows with this. And what we've done, we've given our politicians who've been corrupted by the CIA, by the FBI, by sting operations, by the Mossad, by MI6, by J. Edgar Hoover, they've been corrupted either by blackmail or by having sex with children or hookers or drugs or inappropriate campaign fund distribution or whatever they've done. They've done something, over 50% of them. And that's what J. Edgar Hoover said. We don't have to control everybody in Congress, just, you know, 51%. And we've allowed these corrupted politicians to stay in office for decades. You know, I'm not talking one term. I'm talking 4, 5, 6, 8, 10, 12, 15, 20 terms from these congressional leaders. And they become part of this deep state project in which they do whatever they're told to do. This group of people have sold themselves out to the military-industrial complex, who basically is run by this group of criminals. They've sold themselves out over to the CIA, which is a satanic organization that actually had witches on payroll. They've sold themselves out and are controlled by the Mossad, MI6, the international banking cartels who are at the head of this, the satanic groups who basically sacrifice children, and then we have the wizards and the warlocks, the priest class. You say the priest class? Yeah, and I'm not talking about like good priests. I'm talking bad priests. This is the priest class of these druids and warlocks and wizards that are above them. This is the priest class. And it controls all of it down through the satanic networks, through the banking cartels, through the drug trade, through the CIA, through organized crime. All of this is controlled through this. These are the ones that see money as an energy flow. These are the ones that conduct the human sacrifices. These are the ones that basically have enslaved us via fiat money, Babylonian money, Babylonian money magic, they call it. And they see energy, they see money as an energy flow. They don't see it as a real dollar or currency. And they see it basically something they can control. This is that group. They've been around for thousands and thousands of years. They've been thrown out of over 50 different countries because of this junk when they figure out who they are and what they do. Now, this group has given themselves over to Lucifer. This is they call their god Ein Sof. This is the, we talked about this Friday 2 weeks ago, as far as what they do with the Kabbalah and who they worship. This is a giant serpent god who lives in this giant tree with 1,000 points of light that they consider to be the universe. This is the guys who preach this. This is the guys who believe this stuff, and they want to basically resurrect this serpent god and bring in a Antichrist through the Third Temple. Now they're having Jewish prayer now on the Temple Mount next to the mosque there. That's the first time that's happened in a long time, being guarded by the police. And they say in their article that's posted to Health Masters that their final goal is to rebuild Solomon's Temple, or of course it would be the Temple of Herod. And, you know, this is what they want to do, because they can bring this Antichrist into being and basically produce him to run the planet. And then they're going to tie us all into a D-Wave computer, including themselves, which will be a direct interface into an interdimensional interface with Lucifer himself to allow him to become omnipresent. This has happened once before with Genesis chapter 6. Now, we don't have the exact diagram of how it happened from a technological standpoint in the Bible, but it says that every thought of every man was evil all the time, and the only way that could happen is to have this interface tied back together with us through the energy field around the planet. So this is what their goal is to do this again, to bring us all under a one-world religion, a one-world currency, a one-world government, and they've repeatedly stated those goals, and it's all based in Kabbalah, all of it. And all of these, all the black magic, all the magicians, all the witches, all the warlocks, all of this stuff comes right out of this mess. Potions, herbs, poisons, all of this stuff out of this mess. And you can read it in detail if you'd like, and you can listen to the show that we did. Now, a few weeks ago, just to tie this all together, Taylor Swift is now on Rolling Stone, is calling out Scooter Braun during a Billboard Women in Music speech. I told you guys, that's a few weeks ago when her music was sold out from underneath her and the rights were sold out from underneath her, and she wasn't even allowed to sing her music in live concerts anymore, and somebody sold her music for hundreds of millions of dollars. Remember what I told you? I called it out. I called it out before she did this. I said the only people that have that kind of money are the Rothschilds, because this is what they control. They control the music industry. These Sabbatean Kabbalist Luciferians, this is what they are. They control the music industry. And this time, during the speech, Billboard Women music speech, she basically says that a representative for 23 Capital, Rothschild, has responded to Rolling Stone's request for the comment, 23 Capital, history of working with clients across the music industry, including artists, managers, songwriters, etc. Then it goes on to say, Swift again commented on her ongoing feud with Scooter Braun. Swift really called out Brown after his company purchased Big Machine labeled group and the master rights for first six albums. That's for the $200 million. And now she's calling out all of them. Here they are. Get ready, guys. George Soros, who I've told you 100 times and I've proven to you with the research from the historical documents that I've read on this show, is a Rothschild cutout, George Soros, 23 Capital, and Carlyle Group, another Rothschild cutout, are the ones who spent the $200 million. I told you, without even knowing who these guys were, that the Rothschilds were involved in this a month ago. And I called it right. This is the same group that does it all. See, they own it all. And I've talked to you guys about this so many times with Austin. If it was Rothschild Service Station, Rothschild Hardware, Rothschild Amazon, Rothschild Microsoft, Rothschild everything, you'd say, well, how about we don't support Rothschild? Yeah, but because they use these different names, these different front groups, these different cutouts, you call them, or front people, you don't know it's them. The other day I was at Publix, which is a large grocery here in Central Florida, which is independently owned by the people who basically, the Jenkins family, who started this back in the 50s. And it was interesting to me. They now have a place called Greenwise here in Lakeland, close to us, and it was packed. We went in there the other day, and it's like all organic, non-GMO kind of food. Really good store. It's like a giant health food store. And I went over to the customer service desk, and I was talking to them about something, and I said to them, I said, guys, thank you for this. And they said, what do you mean? I said, we don't have to support Whole Foods anymore. We can support Publix, because nobody likes Jeff Bezos, who now owns Whole Foods. We don't trust him at all. And the guy goes, well, I hear that all the time. You know why? Because it's getting out there. We've had enough of these people who own it all. You know, if you really think that that moron Jeff Bezos or that moron Elon Musk, who likes to stay stoned all the time, are the ones that basically started their organizations, yeah, you need to dig a little deeper and find out where their funding came from. Like that guy in China, who's the richest guy in China now, who's made, what, I read the whole article on it. He was funded through a Rothschild group over there, and he basically was making like $6 a week, and now he's the richest guy in China. And they gave him a $20 million loan, making $6 a week. Yeah, okay, how does that even work out? This is who runs the planet. It's always the international money market, international money managers. They're the ones who control everything, because without the money, you can't do anything as far as entrapping people. You can't do it. If you don't have the cash flow to maintain the organizations, to pay the lobbyists, you can't do it. Dig under any rock deep enough, and you're going to find these clowns at the bottom of the rock. Austin, what do you think?
Oh, that's spot on, and that's exactly what you see with the banks, and that's why I laugh sometimes. Same thing, me and you will laugh when you see some of these individuals. They end up being the fronts for these companies, and all of a sudden the company's worth, you know, 50, 60, 80, 100, $200 million out of nowhere, and then you find out they get these huge loans out of nowhere, and you just kind of giggle, because any normal person that isn't involved with these guys, you simply go try to get a $200,000 or $300,000 mortgage, just a couple $100,000 mortgage, and they want to know basically everything you've done, including what you ate for breakfast when you were 8 years old. It's insane. It's absolutely ridiculous how much information they want on you. And then they give you a hard time if you made like a cash deposit 6 months ago. They want to know what your parents did. All, I mean, it's ridiculous. Everybody knows what I'm talking about. It's ironic because they're getting a fixed asset that basically is going to retain value as far as real estate and land, and they're loaning money to you at interest for decades on end, and they want to completely and totally grill you on everything you've done, even if you have a high Beacon score, even if you make good money, even if everything checks back, they still want to absolutely grill you to find out. But then all of a sudden, these dudes will pop out of their garage with an idea, and all of a sudden, they get a $100 million loan from somebody, and you're going, yeah, okay, that's cool, because the banks just give out $100 million when they're in a good mood. That happens. Not, I mean, it was funny. I was talking to a buddy of mine who's a builder. You know, he's constantly got revolving cash going through his account all the time, and he said he was so frustrated because he's got a local bank, and he was putting a bunch of money in a money market account as far as, you know, extra income that was coming in to try to make some resemblance of interest on this money. And he said it's horrible now because, like, the money markets account, you know, are like 1.9%, 2%. And he said it was ironic because, you know, the banking manager was, you know, telling him how, oh, yeah, well, you need to be really excited. You know, you're getting, like, 2% on your money. And, you know, I think he had like, you know, $100,000, $200,000 in the account that he'd been putting in there from a lot of business stuff. And he goes, you know, I'm literally making like a couple $1,000s a year in interest off this account. A couple $1,000s a year. And he said the manager was like, yeah, you know, you should be really, really excited about that. You know, you can make all this extra money on it and blah, blah, blah. And he started laughing because he goes, But you don't understand, that $200,000 in my account that you're so graciously giving me, like $4,000 a year in interest on, he goes, that $200,000 in cash that I have in the account, you can loan $8 million via fractional reserve lending off my $200,000. And the bank manager goes, well, what are you talking about? He pulled it up. He goes, you don't know what fractional reserve banking is? A 40-to-1 ratio? 40-to-1. So on the $200,000, you can loan $8 million in loans, and you guys can run them up at 3, 4, 5% interest on $8 million in loans and make hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. And you guys are giving me a hard time and telling me how excited I am about basically getting a couple thousand dollars a year in interest. And he was telling me this, and he was just laughing because he absolutely hates banks too. And once you see what they do and you see how the money manipulation works and the true money magic, how they create money out of nowhere, you get a really, really clear, eye-opening picture of what these people do and why it's become so corrupt and why they go in and own everything. That's why they're pumping in what I told you guys last week with Zero Hedge. They're pushing up almost $500 billion in repo lending over the next 3 weeks. $500 billion into the market. And people just think that, oh, yeah, the market's great right now. Everything's fantastic. It's just going to keep going up, 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 up. We're going to hit, you know, 50,000 on the Dow here soon. And I'm like, guys, you know what's going on. You need to keep your eyes open and understand this is not going to last. They're going to hold it as long as they need to. And this is why they do this. With this money manipulation and this fractional reserve banking and this repo lending, it's because they can manipulate the markets to show anything they want them to show. If they want the markets to show they're doing really well, they show they're doing really well. If they want to contract some of their repo lending, they can show the markets are doing really bad. If they want to short the market and let everybody know they're going to short it so people can basically put bids in on it and puts on it, and then they turn around and pull money out and put money back in, they do it. They control every single access of it. So understand that. That's why I've always told people, if you're trying to hold up assets, put something in silver or gold and just keep it there in a safe area. And again, I'm not a financial planner. I'm not giving you financial advice, but that's what my preference has always been on it, especially with how volatile the markets are now. But in some other health stuff, I want to get on this. We've talked about this a lot. One thing that I continually keep telling our friends, family, listeners, it's a family unit. That concept of being a parent, the concept of not just being a friend to your kids, but actually being a parent and raising them is so crucial right now. And also maintaining family unity the best you can. The family unit is one of the fundamental pillars of society, and it always is in the United States. And now we're seeing some of the main issues in our society is because we're losing the family unit. For decades now, the share of U.S. children living with a single parent has been rising dramatically. New research study basically has shown that it's been accompanied by a decline in marriage rates and a rise in birth rates outside of marriage. The new Pew Research Center study of 130 countries and territories show that the U.S. has the world's highest rate of children living in a single parent household in the entire world. This is why I said the United States, basically the pinnacle of freedom, the beacon of light, all the truth that we see, all the freedom that we see in the United States now, the U.S. has the world's highest rate of children living in a single-parent household. Almost a quarter of U.S. children now under the age of 18 live with only one parent and no other adults. 23% of U.S. children. More than three times the share of the entire rest of the world on average. In the entire other world, rest of the world, the average is 7%. 7% of the children under the age of 18 are living with one parent and no other adults. 7%. The United States, 23%. Guys, that's a real problem. And the issue is we've seen now, again, going back to the bankers and the control with the IRS and the Federal Reserve Bank, they've incentivized and encouraged families not to get married, to have more children out of wedlock, to not basically have children as married couples. You get no financial incentive. It's funny, people go, oh, you're married, you have kids, you get this and that. No, it literally saves me almost nothing on my taxes, especially thanks to Donald Trump's tax cuts, by the way, because the tax cuts actually were better. I'm going to say this, don't yell at me. They were actually better for married families that had children under Obama than they were under Trump now, if you're making even moderately decent money, you know, basically more than like $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year. They stop that now. All the Trump cuts has made it even worse. They're encouraging people not to get married. They're encouraging encouraging people not to have children when you're married. They're encouraging people to have children when you're not married. That's why women now that basically figure out what to do, they decide not to get married. They lose money. If they got 3-4 kids and they're single, they get a plethora of benefits. Significant amount of food, financial aid, college aid, all types of tax refunds because they're not married. Once they're married, all that stuff goes away. And so you see now why we're having this problem, and it in turn breaks down the moral fabrics and ethics of society because you no longer have that family unit anymore. You have children that they barely know their parents, or they have to go back and forth in between families for the whole Christmas season. And I'm not saying that's not manageable. I have a lot of friends. Sadly, I have a lot of friends with a lot of kids now that are in the middle of that. I talked to Lanny yesterday. We just found out another married couple. They've been married for 13 years, 2 kids together. They're now getting divorced. I think that's number 10 out of our friends that basically have gotten divorced now since we've gotten married or since we've basically been engaged. 10 out of us, just us and the people we know, 10 families now that have gotten divorced. And so that's a real issue. And then we start wondering why the kids are having these behavioral issues, why they're getting hooked on the computer and video games and porn at such a young age in some cases, why we're seeing so many issues in school systems with these kids wanting to bring guns to school and shoot at people and have all these violent outrages all the time because there's no family unity anymore. And then the parents, with half the time, they're so busy and wrapped up in their little world, it's easier when they get to whatever parent's house they're going to go sit on their iPad or go sit on their video game in the back room. I've seen it many of times. Parents don't even spend any time with them, even though they barely even get to see them half the time because they get 50-50 custody. This is a serious issue. So, I mean, I encourage people, especially if you have young kids. Now, if you have kids, and I've seen this too before, if you have kids and you basically, they're out of the house and you've been married for a while and stuff goes sideways, whatever. I mean, that's on you. You got to deal with that with you and your marriage and your wife and everything else. I'm not giving you any advice on that because I haven't been involved in that yet. But knowing as a young adult married with multiple kids and the things you have to go through and work through as a married couple with kids, I know that it's so important to do the best you absolutely can. If for nothing, do it for the kids and make sure you can maintain a healthy marriage with a healthy lifestyle and a healthy environment to promote those type of behaviors and ethics and morals for your children to basically replicate when they get older. Because you think about it, you don't think it's that big of a deal. Oh, we got divorced, they're 5-6 years old, we'll do split this. What happens when they get older and they exhibit the exact same behavior? They don't think it's abnormal. They don't think it's abnormal to have kids out of wedlock or get married and get divorced and get married again and have more kids and get divorced, go through 2 or 3 marriages. It's normal to them because they saw their parents do it repeatedly. So it's completely normal behavior for them. In fact, it's sometimes more normal to exhibit that behavior than it is to actually have a normal, healthy Christian marriage with kids and stay married. So this is something that's being done intentionally and promoted intentionally to break down the fabric of society in the United States. That's why we see so many movies now from Hollywood that are constantly depicting broken marriages, step-parents, kids being split up. Almost all these movies now, you constantly notice, very rarely do you see a family unit. That's why I enjoyed the movie Ford versus Ferrari so much when it discussed as far as with all the aspects of it. They tried to show a family unit, and the father was basically the race car driver. He was trying to go and do the best he could, but he was still trying to spend time with his kid. He was taking him to the races all the time. He was still trying to communicate with his wife, and they were trying to work things out. It actually showed the things you deal with in a marriage, but they were working on it and they got through it. So again, that's why I really supported that movie, but this is why it's so important. Now, 23% now of children under 18 live in a single parent household with no other adults in the family now in the United States. That almost a quarter of the population.
Well, you know, the whole thing about it is they want to continue to disrupt the family unit. This is all part of the Frankfurt School, which is brought to you by the 17 Kabbalist Luciferians. They want to destroy everything that it has to do with nationalism and having a healthy child relationship with a parent and having parents with healthy marriages. That's not okay with these guys. They've got to break up and divide the family. That's why so many people are so miserable now in the United States. This weekend, I went to see a movie, and I walked out of it and got my money back, which doesn't surprise any of you guys. And it was the new one, Jumanji 2, with Dwayne Johnson. And I walked into the movie, like one of the first words Danny DeVito, foul mouth, gets in there and starts using God's name in vain for no reason except for just to get a laugh from the audience. Now, let me explain what I mean by that. I don't like the use of using God with the D word under any circumstances. But if you're watching a war movie or something where people are being blown up or being killed or whatever, somebody yells an expletive or whatever, I don't like it, but I got it as part of the context of what probably happened, though I don't like that type of language at all, ever. Okay, but when you do it to get a laugh from the audience, that's where I draw the line. That's it. I walk out. And then he did this at the beginning of the movie, and when Danny Glover, you know, the character, walked into the front door, and he uses God's name in vain, and everybody thinks it's real funny. And you know, Danny DeVito, I think he's 4'8" tall, little bitty thing. I mean, he's like, I think he was in The Penguin. If he had been born in a different decade, it would have administered human growth hormone to him, but he would have never been that short. But yes, anyhow, that's beyond that. I digress. But what ended up happening, and I grabbed my stuff and I said, "Sharon, we're leaving." And she goes, "Well, maybe." And I said, "No, they're going to, if this is how they're starting the movie." And then sure enough, it started GD this, GD that. And it's always, and it was never anything that was, it was just for laughs, to get people to laugh at God's name being used in vain. And finally, after the third or fourth time, I said, "I'm done." And my daughter was with us. We all got up, trotted out of the theater, and left. And demanded we get our money back, and we did. We got a refund. Guys, let me explain something to you. When does this stop? When does this stop? Austin's right. When do we allow them, when do we stop allowing them, I should put it that way, to degrade our family? Here in the first movie, Jumanji, I don't think they had any curse words in it. They didn't use God's name in vain. They may have used some slang or a few bad words, but it was nothing like that. But they wanted to push it up a notch, push it up a notch. So they bring Danny Glover in, some old guy, now he's in his 70s, and Danny DeVito, he's in his 70s, and they want to basically bring in an older demographics to see the movie, so it won't be a kid's movie. So they want to bring in a bunch of filthy language, like people in their 60s want to hear filthy language. Well, guess what? You know, moonshine, we don't want to hear filthy language. That's important. Now Hallmark, now this is interesting. I just got this sent to me. Hallmark had decided not to run their lesbian ads because they got so much blowback by a bunch of women's groups showing two lesbians kissing on their commercials during the show. But in reversal, Hallmark now has said that it will reinstate the lesbian kissing same-sex marriage ads. They're going to keep running the lesbian stuff. Now you think, wait a minute. Well, this is Crown Media, again, Rothschild Control Company, Hallmark's parent company, to pull several ads for the wedding planning site Zola, featuring two brides kissing at the altar, each other, had launched a storm of protests. Celebrities like queer Ellen DeGeneres, super liberal, I have absolutely no respect for anymore, William Shatner, you guys alike. But William Shatner thinks the earth is a Gaia, and he like worships the earth. And he thinks the earth is like, you know, a living entity. Just thought I'd mention that. I have a friend of mine who knows him. And he criticized this move and basically said, boycott Hallmark Channel. He was wanting to boycott Hallmark because they were not going to show the lesbian stuff. Well, now they decided to reverse their calling, and they said it's the wrong decision, and said Sunday will reinstate commercials featuring lesbians that they had pulled following a complaint from a conservative group. Now, I'm telling you what my family will do now, and I'm going to tell my wife this today. We are done with Hallmark Christmas movies. We are done with all of them. That's it. We're not going to watch them in the house anymore. The earlier decision by Crown Media, Hallmark's parent company, to pull several ads for the wedding planning site Zola, featuring these loves, basically has been reversed. The Crown Media team has been agonizing, you know, whatever, over this decision that, as we've seen, that has hurt and has unintentionally caused, said a statement issued Sunday evening by Hallmark Cards CEO, like Perry, simply put, it says, they believe we've made the wrong decision, and we are truly sorry for the hurt that we have caused, and disappointment we have caused. Now, I'm going to add this to it. This is my what I'm saying. To gay and lesbian weirdos could comprise 3% of the population, we're being forced to accept their morals and values. Thought I'd mention that. Zola, the wedding planning site that had made the ads, said it was relieved the decision to pull them had been reversed. In an email to the Associated Press, the company said it would be in touch with Hallmark regarding a potential return to advertising. Now, the LGBT advocacy group GLAAD also expressed relief at the reversal. Its president and CEO, Sarah Kate Ellis, said Hallmark's decision to correct its mistake sends an important message to the LGBTQ people and represents a major loss for a fringe organization like 1 million moms who contacted Hallmark, whose sole purpose was to hurt families like the lesbians. I don't think so. It was a complaint by 1 million moms, part of the American Family Association, that had led to the initial decision to pull the Zola ads. A post on the group's website Saturday said, guys, where's it draw? Where do you draw the line? I'm going to ask you that. You know, Netflix now has a gay Jesus coming out this one for the holidays.
Yep.
Gay Jesus. Yep. I'm going to ask you this. When do you cancel your Netflix subscription?
Yep.
When do you stop giving them money? We've canceled. I mean, I never had Netflix. Austin canceled his. When do you cancel it? When do you say, Ganook, I've had enough of this crap. I'm not putting up with it anymore. I'm not going to sit there and listen to God's name being used in humor with The Rock, with Dwayne Johnson. I'm going to walk out and get a refund. I'm not going to watch Hallmark anymore because they've got a bunch of women kissing now. I'm telling you this, boys and girls, they're going to have guys kissing pretty quick. Yeah. They've got full makeout season. It's going to happen. Maybe a few years, maybe a decade with Hallmark. Who knows? This is where it's going. This is where it's all going. And guys, if you're not willing to accept it, stop giving them your money. Because this Kabbalah group that believes in all of this stuff, that runs the media, is in firm control of what you and your children watch. Gosh. Guys, I love you. I appreciate you. You guys are absolutely awesome. Quick show today. Man, that went by fast. I appreciate every one of you. I had the opportunity and the privilege to pray for you today. I do that every day. I love you guys. Austin, finish it up, and I'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
Well said. And I want to add on that, too, about Netflix. This is why I came for the years ago, because I could already see where they were going with their agenda when they refused to remove the gay and lesbian genre section from the top of the list on my Netflix account when nobody, obviously, Lan and I were the ones that had access to it, nobody ever watched any of those films. They intentionally pushed them to the top of the list, hence why I canceled them and backcharged the last 3 months. Now they're producing this film, basically pushing out there, and Jesus basically brings his gay boyfriend home to meet Mary and Joseph. I kid you not. This is what they're bringing out now. And what irritates me, I think, even more, even the fact that, yeah, what they're doing and making fun of Christianity is very irritating. However, we do live in a free country where if people want to be satirical and they want to be disrespectful, they have the right to do so. But it doesn't mean I have to support it. It doesn't mean I have to pay for it. It sure as heck doesn't mean I have to watch it. But why is it always towards Christians? When's the last time you heard Netflix coming out with a gay Muhammad episode? When's that? Tell me a gay Muhammad episode. Muhammad comes home and brings his gay boyfriend home. When's the last time you ever heard of a movie like that ever being released? Or a gay Buddha? When's the last time you heard of that? Never. Never. So understand what they're trying to do, what they're trying to push, why they're trying to do it, and don't support it with your money. Again, guys, thank you for the support of a company that tries to get the truth out there the best we possibly can at healthmasters.com. We are absolutely pushing this every single day to try to get the truth and the news out there in a real sense, just unfiltered. You guys know how Ted and I are, wide open every single show. This is what it is. This is our stance on it, and this is how we're bringing it. We're not censoring it. We don't have commercials. We don't have any ads. We don't have any sponsors. Nobody comes in and tells us that we can't say exactly what we want to say, hence why this show is so raw all the time. So thank you again for your support of Health Masters, helping us out, buying them products from us, buying toothpaste, buying multiple, heck, buying purple sticks from us. It keeps the show on the air and keeps us going. So thank you again for the support. If you need anything, healthmasters.com, 1-800-726-1834. Have a blessed, safe, awesome night. We'll talk to you again tomorrow, as always.